Good morning. Please be seated. This chair is much lower than it needs to be for me. Good morning and welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. It is May 11th, 2023. We have three matters on the calendar for oral argument. The first two here in courtroom 200 and the third will be by Zoom. Counsel, the first matter on the calendar is Meadows of Bloomfield Association versus State Farm. You're both familiar with our procedures. I'll remind you each have 15 minutes for rebuttal. Counsel for appellant, you will have 5 minutes. Or you will have 15 minutes for your argument, Chief, and 5 minutes for rebuttal. The timing is indicated in the lighting at the podium. The podium can be raised or lowered to accommodate your needs. And the only other thing I would note is that you will need to identify yourself and the party you represent when you begin your argument because they are being recorded. With that, counsel for appellant, you may proceed.
Thank you. Good morning. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Scott Williams, and I represent Appellant State Farm Fire and Casualty Company in this matter. We have raised a few different items on appeal, but I want to start with one that I think is the matter of first impression in Minnesota, namely the question of whether an insurer must pay to make something uniform in appearance, which is not uniform at the time of the loss. That's really the crux.
Counsel, if I could just stop you there, why does that matter? Don't we look at the language in the contract, and based on prior case law, it doesn't really seem to be an issue of that would be determinative here.
Well, I think it is determinative because in the policy contract itself, there's no language that says State Farm will match anything.
Well, but we construe the contracts in favor of the insurer, and here there's no language, and we had a case where there was actually disclaimer language that was added. It was a non-precedential case, but I was on that panel. And, you know, there's no language like that in this case at all.
Right. No, and I agree with that. But there's also no language granting a match coverage. And I think that's important because what really this boils down to then is an interpretation of the Cedar Bluff decision as applied to the policy contract. And in Cedar Bluff and in any other case that this court or any other court has handled, the uniform appearance of the item is important for determining what the insurer must do. So, for example, in Cedar Bluff, the Minnesota Supreme Court determined that the insurer had to put the insured back to its pre-loss condition. And so in this case, the pre-loss condition are shingled roofs that have mismatched shingles. And so what the district court determined is that State Farm should have to match all of these shingles, which weren't damaged by the storm, but should have to.
But there were a certain amount of number of shingles that had to be replaced simply to do the metal flue replacement work, right?
That's correct. Yes.
So then, and we understand, I mean, we have to take the appraisal's findings of fact, or the appraisal panel's findings of fact. We're not going to look at that again. And they said, you know what? There aren't shingles to replace these that had to be by nature of or by the requirement of the work that was done on the metal components of the roof. We can't match those shingles. So doesn't that put this in the same position as Cedar Bluff?
Well, no, because again, I think the distinction is that in Cedar Bluff, the issue was returning the insured back to its pre-loss condition. So there you had siding panels.
Well, no, it was comparable material and quality, same policy language we have here. And what I'm struggling with, I mean, I understand your argument that every situation of storm loss presents its own facts, and I think our Supreme Court said that in Cedar Bluff. But if what we're trying to do is apply policy language that is the same in both cases, that talks about comparable material and quality, and our Supreme Court says that includes color match, and we know here that there won't be a color match because the shingles that surround the metal parts will be different in color from the rest of them.
Right.
So we have an issue of comparable material and quality, don't we? Like in Cedar Bluff?
We would, but for the fact that really, by virtue of replacing those shingles that need to be replaced as part of fixing the metals on the roof, you would end up, the only issue you would have, it's not an issue of functionality, it's not an issue of the shingles operating as they should. The only issue you have is one is of cosmetic appearance. And so because of that, I think the question has to become, well, what was the appearance at the time of the loss?
In other words, you're arguing that the thing that the the appraisal panel found to be incomparable is the mismatch, and a mismatch already existed.
Exactly.
Therefore, in order to put the parties back where they were before the damage, you would provide a visually mismatched shingle.
Well, you would essentially just be replacing the shingles, and if that leaves a mismatched appearance as existed at the time of the loss, that's really not an issue that the insurance company has to pay for. And again, I go back to Cedar Bluff. I really think this case is the inverse of Cedar Bluff, because if you read the opinion, and I agree, you look at the policy language, you look at the principles that control, but when you interpret those things, as the Minnesota Supreme Court did in Cedar Bluff, the impetus behind the ruling, I don't think I'm overstating this, is that at the time of the loss, this community had color matching siding. And because of the loss, they couldn't find panels that were sufficiently suitable. And so the Minnesota Supreme Court said, well, you can't be left with mismatched siding. That wouldn't be fair under the policy terms. So we are going to determine that the insurer must pay to re-side all of the buildings. In this case, you have a situation where, you know, more than half a dozen, at least in our view, there's a dispute about this, but between 7 and 15 buildings had mismatched shingles at the time of the loss, thus indicating that from the insured's perspective, certainly, the mismatch condition was something that they were able to live with rather than fixing all of the shingles at one time.
How do we square your argument with the fact that the policy specifically says that the insurer will determine the value of covered property at replacement cost without deduction for depreciation? Isn't the mismatch because of the wear and tear that roof had undergone or the shingles had undergone before this covered loss?
Well, I think the key, though, there is that you have to look at, for purposes of replacement coverage, what item has been damaged? Why are we doing the work that is going to be done? So, for instance, here, if you're talking about the Valley Metals, absolutely. Those were directly damaged by the loss. And I was kind of thinking of how to compare this in a similar setting, but if you have a television that's damaged by a water loss or a fire, and, you know, in the room over next to it, you have a couch or a table that wasn't damaged and wasn't harmed in any way, you wouldn't say, well, because my couch really looked nice with a television, the way I had it set up, I get a new couch too, or I get a new table too. I think there'd be a line drawn there to say, no, you get a new television once you do the actual replacement of the television and submit the receipt. But that's the item that was damaged. And so here, I think when you go to the shingles, we're already talking about fixing shingles that aren't damaged whatsoever. And we're doing that because they have to be done as part of the repair of the Valley Metals. But I think it's a leap then to say what replacement cost coverage does is also then obligate an insurance company to step in and pay to match items that didn't match at the time of the loss. I mean, we're talking about redoing 37 buildings in this townhome community when there isn't a single shingle damaged by the loss.
That seems contrary to the holding of the case that you seem to be relying on in terms of replacing the shingles. I mean, we understand that you have to look at each case based on the particular facts, but there, it was a similar situation in terms of shingles having to be replaced because they were mismatched. I mean, here, arguably, the appraisal panel could have said, well, there are a couple of different colors. We actually have several different choices of colors. But they didn't say that, and we have to defer to those findings.
Well, and that is the frustrating part about the appraisal decision, because I don't know that deferring to the findings necessarily means that that lands one way or the other here, because the findings themselves only say reasonable match about the community. And so presumably what they're suggesting is that the available replacement shingle doesn't have a reasonable match to the majority of the shingles that are on the townhomes, but they don't say anything about whether that reasonable match applies to the mismatched shingles, in other words, the replacement shingles or the original shingles. And so we're left interpreting that. But again, I think the distinction there, Judge Reyes, is that in those cases, we're talking about something that's uniform. And then the matching exclusion that insurers are trying to rely upon, they're saying, well, why would we have to match something? You know, that item wasn't even damaged as part of the loss. And that's not really what I'm arguing here. What I'm saying is there shouldn't be an obligation to match, certainly when there is already a mismatch. There's no uniform appearance. And so the way this comes up or could come up in other circumstances too is if you have pavers in your driveway, for example, and you have 5, 6, 7, 8 pavers that you've replaced over the years because they've gone missing, and those don't match. They have a different color to them. They have a different color pattern. A tree now falls down, and damages pavers. So let's say there's four pavers that were damaged by a tree and need to be replaced. I think it's too far to say that insurers should then redo all the pavers and make them simply because of a uniform appearance issue, when at the time of the loss, they didn't have a uniform appearance. And I think that's the key to this case.
I think the key, though, is the fact that what when you're talking about replacement cost value, it's you're not putting the person in the position they were in before. You're actually, it's more prospective. And when we look at the contract, let me ask you this question. If there had been a matching exclusion in the contract, do you think you would prevail?
Well, I think if there was a matching exclusion, there wouldn't even be an argument here that State Farm should have to be fixing, you know, any shingles on any roofs.
Right,
you know?
And I'm assuming you'd be citing the Pleasure Creek townhome case, even though it's a non-precedential.
Sure. Sure.
For that proposition.
Sure.
But the fact that there's no matching exclusion in this particular contract seems to argue against your position, though.
I would agree with you if the cosmetic issue we're talking about here is State Farm asking the court to allow it to put mismatched shingles on something that already matched. But I disagree because I think this is a different scenario. And what I would point to, Your Honor, is the Elm Creek decision that this court issued in 2022. That was a replacement cost policy. In fact, the same policy that's in play here. It was an Elm Creek Townhome Association. And in that case,
the harvesting didn't result in mismatch.
Correct. It did not result in mismatch, but it also didn't mean that there was an obligation to supply new items or new materials. And
well,
so
I didn't read that case to go that far. I thought that Elm Creek more focused on the harvesting issue.
It did. No.
Versus the replacement, whether or not the underlying replacement was mismatched or not.
Well, there wasn't a matching issue there, right? In the sense right. of a color mismatch, I would agree. But the reason I think it responds to the argument about the replacement cost coverage is that what the insured was arguing in that case is, well, it wouldn't be fair to let these items that are already installed in these other buildings be used again because we have replacement cost coverage. And the court said, no, that's not what replacement cost coverage is. And so I think in a similar context here, simply because somebody has replacement coverage doesn't mean you get to have items that aren't damaged replaced as brand new. And I think that's really the key here in terms of these, again, buildings that have mismatched shingles at the time of the loss. And I think that, to me, is where Cedar Bluff actually supports State Farm's position here. Because if you read Cedar Bluff and presume that there would have been mismatched siding at the time of the loss, it's hard to read the opinion then and have it make sense, because it seems like what the court is getting at is, why would an insured be left with mismatched color siding when it didn't have that at the time of the loss? And that just would be simply unfair.
Or that
unjust.
It wasn't of like quality and comparable material and quality. I mean, that was the policy language Cedar Bluff was interpreting, right?
Yep.
To say that includes, among other things, reasonable color match.
Correct. Yep. And I think here that's no one's suggesting that the shingles that are available wouldn't be a similar, you know, quality or usefulness. It's just simply the color mismatch. But the color mismatch existed at the time of the loss. And so again, you know, I think it's one step further than Cedar Bluff to say, well, what that really means then is reasonable, you know, quality or, you know, similar quality material applies to circumstances where at the time of the loss there wasn't a color match. Because again, I just want to reiterate, the only reason we've been talking about shingles here at all in terms of redoing anything is because of a cosmetic concern, period. And the cosmetic concern predated the loss.
What should be the remedy? Assume we agree with you on the issue of law. What should we do as a remedy?
Sure, and I know my time is running short, but I think certainly the decision should be reversed on summary judgment. I mean, that obviously takes care of our other issues here, too, relative to the replacement cost benefits being deemed owed immediately, the Rule 115 argument that we have. If it's reversed, I think it should be submitted back to the district court for a determination of how many buildings had mismatched shingles at the time of the loss.
Didn't the appraisal panel already make that decision?
Well, certainly not as part of the original appraisal. As part of this secondary component, when the district court asked the panel to make that determination, they did come back with a building-by-building analysis. I mean, it's factually incorrect. The concern I have with
this... Well, again,
this,
we don't look at... I mean, I think the law is pretty clear that we're not going to look at the facts found by an appraisal panel. We will look at whether they misapplied the standard, which I don't think you argue they did. They looked about, you know, they talked about reasonable color match.
Well, I think where the misapplied standard comes into play is that they didn't do a building-by-building analysis on the front end or make any determinations about mismatched shingles. And so that's a factual finding that's missing, essentially. Now, the concern I have, you know, frankly, is that in the appraisal context, you don't get to do discovery before appraisal. So these materials that we received as part of the district court's order to allow State Farm to collect information about prior repairs was never seen by the panel, nor could it have been.
But your adjuster was out there and saw that there was mismatched stuff. I mean, absolutely. It's not like that issue wasn't presented to the appraisers.
Well, I mean, it was, you know, we certainly saw it and discussed it, but again, the concern becomes is that the panel didn't make a finding on it, certainly in the original award, and when the court said, well, tell us how many buildings had mismatched repairs, they didn't have the repair invoices that showed how many were done, and they had never done that visual inspection at the time of the loss, which is why they wrote back and said, well, how would we do that? And then they tried to figure out a way to get the bottom. So I think reversing, getting back to the district court to make that determination, and then the coverage and legal analysis follows from that. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Counsel for respondent.
May it please the court. Counsel, my name is Adina Bergstrom, and I represent the respondent in this case, Meadows of Bloomfield Association. This case is simple and straightforward. All of the legal issues are firmly rooted in precedential Minnesota law, and we have a valid appraisal award. And in that respect, State Farm has failed to meet its burden of proof on two counts. First, it's failed to meet its burden of proof showing that the hail damage at issue is excluded under the policy. Admittedly, there is no exclusionary language for matching. As this court has already noted, the policy language here mirrors nearly identically what was at issue in Cedar Bluff.
Let's assume there is a requirement for matching. How is post-repair mismatching not comparable to the pre-loss mismatched condition?
I just want to make sure I understand your question, Justice Ross. So you're asking how is the post-loss repairs not the same as the pre-loss repairs?
How would leaving the roofs mismatched, replacing only those shingles necessary for the actual storm damage? How would leaving the roofs mismatched not be comparable to a pre-loss condition when the pre-loss condition was itself mismatched?
Certainly, Your Honor. And it's comparable materials, and that is actually, per Cedar Bluff, part of the powers of the appraisal panel to construe that language in situ, looking at the roofs and taking into account all the information presented at appraisal. Cedar Bluff makes clear that part of the factual determinations that fall within the scope of authority of an appraisal panel is to determine whether a product like a shingle or a piece of siding presented at the hearing constitutes a reasonable match for repairs of the property. The panel in this particular case looked at all the roofs, noting that, and I think this is a point overlooked here by counsel, 30 of these roofs had a perfectly uniform appearance. 7 had some non-matching shingle repairs as part of maintenance, as you pointed out.
So we're on the same page. When we're talking comparable here, at least as far as the appraisal panel was concerned, the focus was on aesthetics, appearance.
Yes, and truly, Your Honor, part of matching is an aesthetic. It is an appearance-driven analysis, and Cedar Bluffs is clear on that, as are the cases that follow.
Right. So that's my. So if it's mismatched before, I think we are on the same page. When we talk about comparable material, the comparable issue in this case, what was not comparable was the visual appearance, the colors of the shingle. If I'm not mistaken, that's what we're talking about. Purely aesthetics, not effectiveness.
Right. We are talking about appearance. We are talking about matching. That is correct. And the panel in this particular situation.
So if it's mismatched and appearanced before the damage, why isn't leaving the property mismatched in appearance after the repairs comparable, providing a comparable solution, actually providing a match?
Because, Your Honor, number one, it is up for the panel to determine whether or not the shingle presented is a reasonably comparable match. And I think that that's the piece, right? And this is something that the Supreme Court actually discussed in Cedar Bluff, both at hearing, and it's referenced slightly in their opinion. Part of the discussion was, where is the range of matching? Does it have to be an identical match? We don't want red and yellow siding, but we're also not going to consider off-white and white, whether or not that is a match. Now, there were some non-matching repairs. However, there's nothing in the record to say, well, that was not a reasonable match at the time.
The focus of the district court was about uniformity. And these nuanced distinctions that you're making right now doesn't seem to be a part of the district court's analysis. Correct me if I'm wrong.
No, it is. The district court kept his opinion very, very simple and very straightforward, and I think it's correct from that perspective. What the court did, which is proper, is defer to the factual findings of the panel on this issue. The issue of whether or not this shingle, the ITEL-identified shingle, presented a reasonable match for any of the 37 buildings out at the property.
But am I correct or not correct that the district court's analysis was based upon the idea of uniformity in color?
The district court's decision is actually based upon, first, the decision in Cedar Bluff saying that giving deference to the panel and giving deference to the panel's determination, and to the decision in Cedar Bluff that the policy language, which is virtually identical here, covers matching.
I'm asking you about the analysis of the district court, and I'm not sure you're answering, or maybe you don't know the answer. I'd hate to think you're avoiding the answer.
Oh, I'm absolutely not avoiding the answer.
It's okay if you're not sure.
No, and I think that your question is, did it hinge on uniformity? And what I'm saying to this court is, I don't think that the court's decision hinged on uniformity.
Did the district court discuss uniformity?
The district court talked about, let me see here, if you would give me 1 second, I can certainly take another look.
I don't want you to take all of your time.
No, that's quite all right, Your Honor. There's nothing that jumps out at me where the court hinged its decision on uniformity, but I would also submit to this court that that's appropriate because Cedar Bluff doesn't necessarily hinge on uniformity either. What Cedar Bluff hinges upon is this idea of construing the language of the policy to say what is required for a replacement cost policy. And this concept of comparable materials falls within the replacement cost language. Again, over a century of case law talks about the fact that an appraisal panel has the power to determine factual issues such as causation, reasonable match, means and methods of repair.
Just so I'm clear, and I don't want to, I want to understand the case appropriately. When you refer to comparable materials, the incomparable element in this case is about aesthetics only. Am I correct about that or not?
Correct. So the shingle would be the incomparable material. And when that third shingle was proposed, it was certainly within the panel's purview to say it matches, it's reasonable to put a third shingle on, or no, it doesn't match any of the shingles, and we're going to award matching. That's a factual finding by the panel that can't be disturbed by this court. That's akin to disturbing a jury verdict on a factual finding, and it certainly can't happen under the law. The case law is clear. I know that there's encouragement here not to give deference to the appraisal panel's factual findings, but that is in direct conflict with Minnesota law and presents a collateral attack on the award that simply was never made.
Let me ask you this. I tend to agree with you that in terms of an appraisal panel's findings of fact that we defer. And so we'll defer to the fact that the new shingles that were put on every roof out of necessity because of the work that was done to replace the metal portions was not a reasonable color match with existing shingles.
Yes.
So it seems to me that really the argument from appellant, if that is true, is more one of law for the district court and for us to review de novo, and that is whether this fundamentally presents a different case than Cedar Bluff, because there's no indication in the opinion from Cedar Bluff that the siding on the existing 20 buildings was mismatched at all. And does that present sort of a legal issue for us? And why it seems a big leap from, okay, we have to replace all the siding on all 20 buildings because there's no match, color match. to a situation where there was no color match to start with.
And again, I would defer back to the fact that we're talking about seven buildings, not the other 30, and State Farm is arguing no match on any of the buildings. That would be number one. But secondly, in terms of the legal issue, the answer is no. There is no true distinguishing factor here because, again, we have to think of, you know, in the insurance context, the court construes the policy language. The panel is the one finding the facts out on site. So deferring to the panel on these factual determinations is the end of the controversy when it comes to damages, including this matching issue. The only issue then for the court is taking that valid award and pairing it up with the policy language. Here we've got itemization in document number 80, which is the clarification of the award, broken down building by building, awarding matching for each building. That binding award that says not a reasonable match is then paired to the policy language here. Policy language, as Judge Reyes has already described, there is no exclusion. And those exclusions have been available in the market at least since the time that Pleasure Creek was decided, which was a 2016 endorsement, coming out 2 years after Cedar Bluff was decided in 2014. The remedy here for State Farm was easy. One, add an exclusion to the policy. An exclusion stating we are not going to cover matching, we are not going to cover uniform appearance, or...
I guess that's my trouble here. If there was a requirement for matching, and the pre-loss condition was mismatching, then mismatching would seem to be a match, would satisfy the obligation to match. Even if, without regard to whether there is an exclusion. Help me to understand why that's wrong.
And very respectfully, I do disagree with you, and here's why. It's a fundamental principle under Minnesota law that we talk about like for like. They only get what they had after a loss, what they had before of a loss. That is an actual cash value analysis under insurance law. If this were an actual cash value policy, and State Farm could have opted to insure these seven roofs, all of the roofs under an ACV policy. If they insure it under that type of policy, then yes. What you had before is what you get now. They didn't do that. They insured it under a replacement cost policy, which inherently is a contractual obligation to pay for new improved betterment under the policy. That's not me saying that. That's the Cornelius case in Minnesota. That law has been around for a very long time and is a fundamental tenet of Minnesota law, that you are going to have something better. You're going to have something newer and improved over what you had before contractually.
As to quality, and that's where I'm still stuck on the difference between the aesthetic and the function.
Yeah, and I don't believe that it is limited to quality, because really when you talk about ACV, you're talking about depreciation, which is prior condition of the property, and the Sella case, which is cited favorably in the Elm Creek case, actually talks about, you know, how depreciation, prior damage, prior repairs, how that is a depreciation ACV issue. So those items all play to ACV. They have no impact on the replacement cost value of the property and what's owed contractually by the insurance company. Again, State Farm wrote the policy. They could have included a limitation to not cover on replacement cost value if there was a prior non-uniform appearance, if there was a prior type of damage. They didn't do that. And I also believe it's important here to remember that because the panel in this case and in all cases under Quaid determine the damages caused by a particular cause of loss, which is what they did here, the panel's award ties the mismatch directly back to this particular storm. And that can't be overlooked. So that valid portion of the award then just simply has to be interfaced with the policy language as we find it.
Let's take up an analogy. I don't know if it's a good one or not. It came probably not because it just floated into my head. I haven't thought about it a lot. But let's assume we're not talking about real property. Let's assume we're talking about a type of personal property. Let's say a china set has been insured. And you have two families. One has a china set that it's all the pieces are matching. The next door neighbor has a set where absolutely none of the pieces matches, and there's both have a loss, burglary, fire, whatever, and there are three pieces of the china set destroyed in both homes. These pieces aren't made anymore. We can't simply replace. We have to replace the whole thing in the first family that has the matching set. Otherwise, they'll have mismatched china. The other family says, you know, we'd like a matching set too now. Don't just replace these three with three mismatched pieces of china of comparable quality to the ones we lost. Is the second family entitled to replacement of the entire china set?
And I don't mean to be disrespectful. It would be under a different coverage under a business personal or under a personal property
sure,
because there's usually coverage for
these principles
for matching sets. And in this particular situation, I think it's a little bit comparing apples to oranges because the coverages under the policy are so different. So when we're talking about the real property piece versus business, like personal property typically has a matching sets type of coverage under the policy. So it's really going to be driven by the policy language there, Your Honor. And here we have to go back to Cedar Bluff because that is already determinative of the precise policy language that we're talking about. So every case, and I think this goes back to, you know, every case has to stand on its own merits. And here we've got to take the policy language as we find it and as construed by the Minnesota Supreme Court. And I know that this court also, when it was considering Cedar Bluffs, found that there was coverage, albeit for different reasons, found that ambiguous language has to be construed in favor of coverage. And we have to defer to the factual findings of the panel. And those are the facts where we find ourselves here. So I'm not trying to avoid your question, Your Honor. Maybe I just am too much of an insurance nerd and I know too much about the coverages. So we're fundamentally talking about just two different things here.
But if the principles applied, what would be the rationale? If the same principle applied to personal property and real property, what would be the equitable, logical, legal principled reason why both these families would be treated the same in the coverage of their china sets?
You know, I think that part of it would come down to two things. One, I mean, if we're just looking at the situations apples to apples, we've got a matching set, a non-matching set. You know, if we're talking about replacement cost coverage and we've got an appraisal panel making a finding that's identical to both, it doesn't change the coverage under the policy. And so that therein lies where we have the same result, because when you're deferring to an appraisal panel to make that decision, it's an adversarial process. For lack of a better way to say it, you're rolling the dice. You're just like at trial. You're presenting your evidence to the panel. Oh, I'm out of time.
You may finish your sentence.
Thank you very much,
you are
Your Honor.
Out of time.
You're on a roll, too.
Literally. You're presenting your evidence to the panel, and they're making a factual determination that is then final and binding. I would ask the court to affirm the district court in all respects and confirm the judgment. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. Williams, you will have the last word.
Thank you. Just want to touch upon a few points here. With respect to the Cedar Bluff decision, the district court even noted that this case was unique because, quote, State Farm is challenging the matching in buildings which had non-matching pre-storm repairs. So the district court noted that this was a case different than Cedar Bluff because of that specific fact. And in the Cedar Bluff decision, the Minnesota Supreme Court notes that because of the color mismatch resulting from the inability to replace the hail damage siding panels with siding of comparable material and quality, the covered property, Cedar Bluff's buildings, has sustained a distinct, demonstrable, and physical alteration. Thus, we conclude that covered property sustained a covered loss. And so what I think is important there is that the court points out that because of the color mismatch, that is the reason there that the coverage was owed, because there couldn't be found a siding panel that would match what was uniform throughout the community.
Adding the word uniform.
I am, but I mean that's
that,
my
that isn't that the critical question that doesn't it does not that word is not in
correct.
The policy.
No, it's not, but I think that reading, I mean, why would the color match matter if there was not uniform color? And I think that's what it kind
but,
of starts
but that,
from.
That's the argument that you make in your brief and in your reply brief, but I didn't see that language in any of the cases with the exception of one, I think, Washington non-binding, non-precedential case that you cited. Like Judge Bjorkman said, that language isn't in the policy, and that's really what we need to look at. The language is comparable material, not uniform material, but comparable material.
Right, but again, in terms of comparable, we're talking about cosmetics purely, and so comparable to what? Well, at the time of the loss, if you have mismatching shingles, certainly we can provide mismatching shingles.
But that's not the argument that I see you making. Is you're arguing more uniform, which is a different standard than comparable.
Well, it's. I think it's the same in terms of looking at what the pre-loss condition of the item is.
But we're not really talking about, and we're not, you go back to pre-loss condition, but really we're talking about the replacement cost value, which is not so much looking at the pre-loss condition. We're not talking about depreciation here.
Right.
We're talking about putting the, whenever you replace something, you are, by definition, going to put the person in a better position than they were before. Because the material is going to be newer. It's going to be, the issue is whether or not you can have basically a color that is comparable to what had been there before. And isn't that really a decision that we defer to the appraisal panel to make under our binding case law?
So a couple things I would say there is, in terms of the betterment, I agree for purposes of items that are actually damaged. But Cedar Bluff is talking about items that aren't damaged. And there, what the court talks about is color mismatch. And I think that the color mismatch then inherently means, well, what was the color or the condition of the property at the time of the loss? We cited the cases from multiple jurisdictions in the United States, including the Seventh Circuit, that have all looked at issues similar to this and said, well, if you have mismatching items, mismatching condition, certainly that's something that's relevant for a coverage analysis. There is not a single
case
going
the other way. But are those cases interpreting the same language that we have here?
Effectively, yeah. I mean, it's the question is whether or not that there's been
when you say effectively, that, you know, words matter in terms of, in Cedar Bluff, the language in that insurance policy were virtually identical to what we have here.
Right. Well, and
I didn't see the policy in the other cases that are non-precedential or from other jurisdictions. I didn't see those as being comparable to what we have here.
Well, the reason I say effectively is just because when we're talking about so many policies in, you know, 8-10 different cases, I assume some of them have slightly different language. I am not going to deny that. But I don't think the principles change. And again, conversely, there isn't a single case that we could find from any jurisdiction where a court has said the fact that something mismatched at the time of the loss doesn't matter. The insurer must replace it. Now, what I will say about the appraisal panel component of this, too, keep in mind the appraisal panel here, none of them are lawyers. None of them saw the policy contract at the
time
of the
appraisal.
Why does
that matter?
Well, it matters because if we're talking about giving deference to their quote-unquote findings, they have zero deference given relative to issues of law, and that goes to the Quady decision from
But they didn't misapply the legal standard. I want to take you off because you have 26 seconds. I want to make sure I understand your other issues because I'm a little confused.
Sure.
You're
okay.
Not challenging the interest award.
Well, we don't take issue with the fact in terms of how it was calculated, that
okay.
It was calculated off of
And flowing from the time of the appraisal award.
Right.
I mean, that's all. You don't challenge that.
Well, right. I mean, you know, in terms of the case law that exists and the Elm Creek decision, we're not challenging that. The issue is about on the order of the replacement cost benefits being owed immediately when there is no proof.
And that I don't understand. I mean, I'm looking at the court's order, and it's basically, I think it said the appraisal panel award is confirmed. I don't, and it says interest will run until it's paid, but I'm not sure I follow your argument about the district court having erred by directing entry and enforcement of the award.
Yeah, the issue there is just simply purely in the policy contract, State Farm is obligated to pay replacement cost benefits when repairs are completed and has the option of paying up to the amount of what the insured paid to have the repairs completed. At the time of the summary judgment hearing, there was zero evidence in the record about repairs being completed or how much, if any, had been paid to have repairs done.
Well, and I think that was, the parties knew that going into the appraisal, that the decision, in fact, was made to have the appraisal before the repairs were done.
Right. No, and I want to be clear, I'm not challenging the appraisal award on that at all. What I am challenging, though, is that the district court entered judgment immediately when, if you look at the cases we cited from the federal district courts, for example, who've addressed some of these similar issues, what the courts have said is that the insurer wouldn't owe replacement cost benefits until there's evidence that the repairs have been done. And so what they do is they enter judgment on the actual cash value of the award and then hold back any judgment on the replacement cost value until such time as that would be ripe. And that's what I think the error was here is the court obligated State Farm to pay replacement cost benefits immediately, the interest
and,
on those
and what
benefits.
Relief would you ask from this court on that point?
Well, I think there would, again, need to be a reversal and then an allowance of State Farm to know what, if anything, has been paid for repairs. That's when the amount that would State Farm would actually owe the amount would be at that time, and then interest would correspond with that. And again, this goes to these federal court decisions that have addressed this just within the last year or two. But it's the idea is what we're really concerned about there is the premature entry of judgment and saying you owe this amount now when clearly State Farm shouldn't owe it until a future date, and then interest shouldn't begin running until that future date on the replacement cost component of the interest award. And I can't explain any better than the district court decisions did, but they have it laid out very nicely in there. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, counsel. Thank you both for your helpful argument. Interesting case, and that was well presented by both parties, so we appreciate that. Thank you. We'll take the matter under advisement, issue our decision within the statutory 90-day period.